What this technology does is a 20-minute application of this electrical waveform will induce a temporary state of what neuroscientists call hyperplasticity, or, you know, for this conversation, we can think of it as hyperlearning.
Hey, how you doing? Brian Kane, your Peak Performance Coach here with the Peak Performance Podcast, and welcome Inner Circle members. Where today you're going to get to interact with our guest. Dr. Daniel Chow is a neurotech entrepreneur specializing in devices that improve brain performance. He's the co-founder and CEO of Halo Neuroscience. Now, the company's first product, Halo Sport,
there it is.
First neurostimulation system built specifically to accelerate movement-based training with applications in sports, military, musicianship, and stroke rehab. Now, before Halo, Dr. Chow was the head of business development at NeuroPace, where he played a central role in the development of the world's neurostimulation system that was approved by the FDA for the treatment of epilepsy. Prior to NeuroPace, Dr. Chow was a consultant at McKinsey & Company and earned his MD and MS in neuroscience from Stanford University. Today, we're going to learn about how Halo Sport is changing the game in terms of strength development, fine motor skill development, and acceleration in athletes across all sports. Please welcome to the Peak Performance Podcast, Dr. Daniel Chow. Glad you're here.
No, thanks for the opportunity. And please call me Dan.
Oh, Dan, please, thanks for being here. And Dan, if you would, could you kind of give us your background for the coaches and athletes that are listening to this podcast and kind of your background and how you got into Halo Neuroscience and the Halo Sport product?
Yeah. So, like you mentioned, and thanks for that awesome introduction, I'm a medical doctor by training. Went to Stanford for medical school, master's of neuroscience from Stanford as well. And I still remember the day I was sitting in pharmacology class where, we're marching through the different classes of drugs. And it didn't take long for me to realize the miracle of modern medicine was really around drug development. It's like, you know, these days we don't even think about our foot infection. What would have killed us, 100 years ago, we don't even think about it. We just take a little pill and the infection's gone. Same thing like blood pressure control, cholesterol. You take a little pill, you get better, you live longer. It's amazing. But then when you think about drugs for the brain, when we got to that part of the class, the wheels fell off. It's like, drugs for the brain, when you look at the list of side effects, often it's worse than the disease. And when you take a step back, it kind of makes sense, right? We take this little pill, it goes into your gut, gets into your blood, goes all over your body unnecessarily. This little drug needs to pass this thing called the blood-brain barrier. That's a very hard word to say 5 times fast. but yeah, it's this filter that protects the brain from basically the things that make it into the brain is this very privileged part of the circulation, which makes sense. The brain is so important. So only a small amount of drug makes it through this barrier. And what does make it through the barrier goes all over the place as well. So it didn't take me long to realize that there's got to be just this hunger to think through how can we do this better. Sitting in the heart of Silicon Valley, there's tech development all around us. It didn't take me I just started to think what if we applied electricity to the brain, right? I know it might sound crazy because this country's had kind of a storied history around using electricity with the brain, with ECT and these kinds of things. But if you give me some latitude for a second, the brain is this electrical organ. If we used electricity as medicine, we're actually speaking language in a far more organic way, interact with the brain and retune it, first to treat disease and also to think about human performance and what we can do from this perspective. So, what started as an idea in medical school led to my first company. You mentioned NeuroPace. There we created a pacemaker for the brain to help people with epilepsy. So epilepsy is this disease of seizures where drug therapy has really failed this population of people, very sadly, right? Like the drugs for epilepsy just don't work very well. And here we come along with a solution that uses electricity to interact with the brain. And, you know, a significant minority of our patients are effectively cured of their disease, and the vast majority of responders. So, you know, we're really happy with that result, but there was one thing that we wanted to course correct with NeuroPace, and that the NeuroPace device was implanted. So we're talking about a 3-hour surgery that involves implanting electrodes into the brain and a pulse generator in the skull. And, you know, it's really for very severely diseased people. So, you know, we started to think, my co-founder and I, we started thinking about ways where we could deliver neurostimulation to the brain, electrical neurostimulation to the brain, but in a non-invasive package. So, you know, what we found was, and I don't know if you can pull up the slides, Brian, yep. But we saw this this field really taking off. And, you know, what this plots is number of peer-reviewed publications over time covering this particular type of neurostimulation that you can do non-invasively. So we started reading papers back in 2006 when there were only a handful. And, you know, here we are today, we're at over 2,000 papers over the span of 10 years. So it's just really exciting to watch this field take off. And we couldn't help but to get excited about it. That led to the founding of Halo Neuroscience. And you know, we're really excited about this first product that you showed to your listeners just a second ago there.
Yeah, the Halo Sport, and if you would maybe talk a little bit to our listeners about kind of the electrodes that are in here and how this product works to deliver that electrical stimulation to the brain for enhanced performance.
Yeah, so Brian, as you hold that up, your listeners will see you know, something that looks like a set of headphones. But what's different about our headphones is those pieces running across the top. And so we call those primers. We call our technology neuropriming, like you're priming your brain. And so therefore we call those guys primers. But, you know, they're effectively electrodes, right? So those pieces will deliver an electric field that interacts with the brain. Now, when you put on a set of headphones, like even the set of headphones that you're wearing right now, Brian, the arch of the headphone just naturally goes over the motor cortex. So you could see in red there, it's this special part of the brain that controls movement in our bodies is highlighted there. And you could appreciate that any set of headphones, if you put it on like most people, will just naturally go over that piece of neuroanatomy.
Sure.
So, you know, what we did is we built in our electrodes into that real estate, into a headphone form factor so that we can target this part of the brain. You know, what this technology does is a 20-minute application of this electrical waveform, and in this case, to the motor cortex, will induce a temporary state of what neuroscientists call hyperplasticity, or, you know, for this conversation, we can think of it as hyperlearning. So this induced state will last for about an hour. So for an athletic application, you know, what we ask the athlete to do is to wear Halo Sport for 20 minutes before their training session. Give us 20 minutes, and then what we want you to do is we want you to feed the brain quality, deliberate, thoughtful movement training repetitions. And our promise to our athletes is that you're going to get more neurologically from that training session. You know, and I'm sure your listeners know that, you know, brain performance is as important as physical. I mean, the two are so closely linked. It's hard to dissect the two, but there's a big part of what makes an athlete a Hall of Fame athlete versus just a great athlete is neural performance. And specifically the rate at which we learn from training. So we want to hasten that process. We want to accelerate the process that the brain learns from training. You know, we're sympathetic to our athletes in that training is precious, takes time. you impart training load on the body, which induces fatigue and risk of injury. So, you know, practice is precious to us, and we just want to help our users get more neurologically from that same amount of practice.
Now I actually worked out yesterday, and I had the Halo Sport on, and I typically will wear it like as I'm doing my warm up routine. So I'll wear it and I'll foam roll and I'll do some kind of jump rope and kind of warm up the body, and then I'll go into whether it's triathlon training or weightlifting or kind of plyometrics. And when you put this on, you can actually feel. You can feel kind of the buzz on the top of your head. It was almost itchy, right? You know that it's working. And to kind of explain that again, is what it's doing is it's priming the motor cortex for enhanced movement. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So what you're feeling is that electric field doing its job. Mm-hmm. Some people call it like a sensation of itching. What we hear a lot is like a tingling sensation. That's just proof that it's doing its job. And the motor cortex is getting the neurostimulation that it needs.
You know, we had a question come in from one of our Inner Circle members, Matt Morse. How many times a day can you use the Halo? I know a lot of our athletes are MMA fighters or triathletes. They're training multiple disciplines. Was with a college football team today that's doing weightlifting in the morning and more of their on-field skill development in the afternoon. So they get that kind of recovery window during the middle of the day. Can they use the Halo Sport more than once during a day?
Well, Matt, I'm on you. And we get this a lot. When we tell our athletes that 20 minutes is good, they're secretly thinking, well, 40 minutes might be twice as good.
No question.
Unfortunately, Matt, there's some diminishing returns after 20 minutes. Hmm. So 40 minutes doesn't buy you double the time of hyperplasticity. 40 minutes will maybe only buy you an extra 10 minutes of hyperplasticity. So it's not worth your time. And what we'll do is we're going to lock you out through the app.
Yes.
So you can use the system 20 minutes every 8 hours.
Yeah, I noticed that. When you finish it, it immediately goes into an 8 hour countdown, and then there's actually a button in there that you can hit to request more time. Is that something that, in case for some reason you leave the headset on and it's not connected, what is that option for?
You know, that's actually to share it with a friend.
We
hope that the user, him or herself, doesn't do it again within that window of time. But if you've got a workout partner or just a friend who's interested in giving it a go, then that is what that feature is there for.
Love it. And great job explaining that, Dan. Is that makes sense to Matt? So if it makes sense to Matt, I'm sure it will make sense to our other Inner Circle members as well. Matt, thanks for asking the question. And Dan, if we can go back to the PowerPoint here and maybe have you kind of take us through, some of the success that you've had within the military and in other fields as well.
Yeah. So, you know, this is like we saw the science taking off in the published literature. You know, a lot of this, like just like all of this data, not just the volume of data, but the quality of the data, just really piqued our interest. The military was using this for drone pilot training and literally reducing the training time in half if they paired it with this technology versus not. We got really interested in this, and especially the movement-based application, in part because of something that relates to the practicality of movement-based training, in that it's easier to measure than other forms of cognitive training. Like the motor system, we can measure fine motor skill acquisition. We can measure the production of force on a force plate or with different strain gauges. We can put a cyclist on a watt bike and measure the number of watts that they produce over a given amount of time and track their progress with a given amount of training. The motor cortex really was this, the motor system was this thing that we became really interested in and started doing testing. Let's look at some data. I know your followers are pretty sophisticated and are interested in numbers, and especially after reading your last book, hopefully data is a big part of what they do.
Yeah. Sure.
So this looks at, so here's some work that we did with the United States Olympic ski team. We're specifically looking at the amount of force that a group of athletes can generate using a force plate. So force plate is like your digital scale at home times 1,000. It's like 35 grand for one of these things. So the U.S. Olympic ski team is lucky to have lucky enough to have one of these things. And what we did is we took a group of athletes, we split them into two. Half got neurostimulation with Halo Sport, and the other half got fake neurostimulation. So everybody wears the equipment. Everybody has the equipment turned on. Half of them get the real thing, and the other half, which group they're in. The coaches don't know the groups, the athletes don't know. So, you know, it's really one of these what's so-called randomized, sham-controlled, and blinded studies. So we train every day, we measure every day, and this is what the data looks like. By the end of this training program, the Halo Sport group gets better by 31% versus 18% in the control group.
Wow.
So we're really – I mean, 18% would be a win, right? Like if you didn't see the other line, 18% in this elite group of athletes, you'd be happy with that. But, you know, now that we show what you could have gotten if you paired it with neurostimulation, it really brings up some new ideas. Like if 18% was the goal, you could have shut the athlete down after day six, right? If you follow that the 18% line across over to the Halo group, and you could have saved time. Like if you're the military, you could have saved time and moved on to something else. Let's say you're a football team and you're trying to save training load on the athlete to give them more time to rest. That's a good thing, right? Less risk of injury. It's just more efficient training. Or if you're the ski team and you're just trying to train to the maximum of your ability, like all building up to this one day of competition, then heck, just go for it. Do exactly what they did.
Oh, that's great. What I love about the technology that you've got with Halo Sport is just how simple it is and how, you know, an athlete can go into the weight room, they can spray it with the water, they can put it on, and they can go through their warm-up and then go into their movements. Now, one of the questions that we got from Jeff Toller was, he said, what effect would happen, let's say, if you had a bad practice session? Mm-hmm. So let's say you were going into agility drills and you had bad posture or you had bad footwork. Would you be reinforcing bad habits?
It's a great question, Jeff. Yeah, the brain doesn't know what a good or a bad rep is. So, you know, we ask our athletes to be careful, to be really thoughtful and deliberate, to give us a really quality training session that day. If you're an experienced athlete, you probably know what a good rep is and what a bad rep is. So, you know, we ask that you be your own enforcer. If you train with a coach or if you are the coach, you know, you can even warn them. It's just like, listen, I need good reps out of you today. These are going to be stickier reps.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that said, one practice session isn't going to derail the athlete. One bad practice session isn't going to derail the athlete. Like at the end of the day, even with neurostimulation, motor learning happens pretty slowly. So, you're not going to take a great athlete and make them bad in one bad training session. So, it's not like that. Like what I would worry about is if, let's say they trained an entire off season poorly with neurostimulation. But I guess you would have that same concern, you know, without neurostimulation too. So great question, Jeff.
No, that's a great question. And Dan, one of the questions I had for you too was, let's say you were using the skill of mental imagery, which I know a lot of athletes will do. Let's say an athlete coming back from rehab. So let's say I have a football player, tears his ACL. He's in the middle of the season. And what he's going to do is he's going to watch film. And as he watches film, he'll watch the play, he'll close his eyes, and he will visualize himself making the movements on the screen that he would want to be making. Let's say a quarterback, he hurts his shoulder, he can't throw a football, but he's going to visualize himself dropping back and throwing the football. If he were to wear Halo Sport before he did that mental imagery session, would that imagery session have a deeper effect on his neuroplasticity and his development?
I love that question, and I think it'll work, Brian, but I've got no data to support that. So let's talk about some of the science. If you're visualizing movement, without moving. Your motor cortex is still lighting up like a Christmas tree.
Sure.
Yeah, you can watch this happen in a MRI scanner. Person's not moving at all, but if you're visualizing movement, motor cortex is going crazy.
Sure.
And you're learning. You're learning movement by visualizing it, and like we just know empirically that it works. Now the question is, could you make that faster yet with neurostimulation? Hmm. It's a great idea, and I would love to do some testing. I've got no data to support this claim, so you know, I just want to caveat that. But like, I think it'll work.
Yeah, I mean, cognitively, as I think about it, it would, due to the brain lighting up, you know, if you do an MRI scan of the brain when they're doing mental imagery, I would think that you know, obviously we would have to have the data to back it up, but I would think that that would make sense to me that would work.
Yeah, totally. And you know, we've got a lot of athletes that, you know, we've become friends with over time that are using it in this application, and they claim that they're getting results, but you know, I would love to do a proper study, you know, where we take you know, two groups of people and train them up in a different way. One does imagery, the other, well, one imagines imagery of movement and the other imagines imagery of smelling flowers. And let's see who has a better golf swing after that, right?
Yeah. I mean, it would, like I was watching some of the videos on your website. If you go to Halo Neuro, HaloNeuro.com, and one of the videos that I was watching featured the sports science director with the San Francisco Giants. And as I was watching it, some of the players that were in the background that you interviewed, one of which by the name of Tyler Beatty, who pitched at Vanderbilt University, I had as a player in 2013 with Team USA. So as I'm watching him wear the halo and he's working on pitching and all that, I just thought that, you know, as he's watching highlight video of himself, or he's doing mental imagery and all these mental prep things that go into the 5-day starting pitcher routine, would this also benefit him doing that? That would be something I think would be fascinating. One of the top college pitchers in the last decade, and Tyler Beatty, you know, featured with Halo Neurosport. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Only person to ever be drafted twice in the first round, Tyler Beatty.
Yeah, how about that? That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Blue Jays out of high school, I think. And then
that's exactly right.
Yeah, how about that? Small world. Well, another question comes in here, and it comes in from Jacob Armstrong. And Jacob's question is, does increasing the intensity of the stimulation increase the effectiveness of the neural priming session? Mm-hmm. I know yesterday when you start it, and it's so easy to use, you basically connect the Halo Sport with your cell phone, it starts and it counts the 20 minutes down for you, and you can go between a 1 and a 10 stimulation level. But that's a great question. Does increasing the intensity of stimulation increase the effectiveness of the priming session?
So slightly, ever so slightly. So the stimulation intensity is 1 through 10. The entire range is safe and effective. Now, our recommendation generally is to use it at the highest intensity while it's still being comfortable. So, you know, even at level 10 or 9 for most people, it's fine. Like, Brian, I don't know what you use it at, but, you know, for most people, like 8, 9, or 10 is perfectly fine. And if that feels good to you, then yeah, use it at the higher setting.
Yeah, I've used it at 10, and you know, again, you notice that feeling on top of your head, which you know it's working. You know it's actually transmitting the stimulation. I haven't thought about dropping it down. I probably will try that now that I think about it to see if you can tell a difference. What about like the leg power results with a local Dallas company and Michael Johnson Performance? What did you find there?
Yeah, so we worked with Michael Johnson Performance over the summertime, where we had same kind of setup where we divided these athletes into two groups, and we did before and after testing while everybody got the same training in the intervening time. And here the goal was to really look at leg power. So we tested leg power using the Kaiser Ware Squat. Can report the number of watts of power that whatever body part produced. In this case, it was the legs. And then we also tested vertical leap, which is a great, very simple test of how powerful your legs are. And we tested vertical leap two different ways, one with the squat jump and the other with the counter movement jump. And, you know, across the board, the Halo Sport group got better by about 12% versus the control group got better by about 2%. So again, you know, this reinforces the data that we got from the U.S. Olympic ski team. It really, like, this data and more just like gave us the confidence that not only do we have a technology that works in the lab, which admittedly is a very artificial environment, you know, we've got a technology that can work in the field.
Totally. I mean, you can see it. You can use this. What I love about it is not only is it something that you can use in the weight room, but unless you're a football player or a hockey player that's wearing a helmet, I mean, you could wear this while you're doing the fundamental execution of your sport, you know, which I think is going to help speed up that learning curve, especially in the youth athletes where it's so competitive in terms of even being able to make a team to play, that if they can speed up that learning curve, even by 1 or 2%, that's going to maybe make a difference in a young person having a chance to participate in sports and get all the benefits that come with that versus maybe not even making the team.
Yeah. Yeah. Just one note on youth sports. We're 18 and over. Yeah. So we, there's just not enough data in the under 18 group for us to, feel totally comfortable, marketing this to folks that are under 18. There is some data, and everything points towards a safe product in the youth group. But until we have more, you know, we just want to err on the side of caution.
And is there any research currently being done in the youth group? Because that is such a I think huge opportunity for Halo Sport.
Yeah, and you know we're cognizant of that most competitive athletes. I mean, until it's young, you know, as we get older, you know, we start to drop out. So yeah, the biggest meatiest part of our customer pyramid, you know, it tilts young. So yeah, there is data. There's data. It's just not in the thousands. Like, you know, we want to see thousands of subjects being tested. Mm-hmm. You know, we're looking at hundreds right now. So, you know, we'll get there, and you know, we're going to help that too. Like, we're going to partner with, you know, different, you know, sports science institutes and universities that really value sports science and do quality research. And yeah, we'll be a part of that.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Dr. Daniel Chow, Halo Sport. Check it out at haloneuro.com. If serious about athletic performance and serious about improving your game, check out Halo Sport.
Thanks for listening to the Peak Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes and leave a positive review or share a link to this episode on social media using hashtag PeakPod. Mention Brian Kane and one thing you learned in this episode for your chance to win a free ticket to the next Brian Kane Experience live event. Dominate the day.